Hey, it's Chris Jones with the Jones Zone, and this episode of the podcast is brought to you by the Jones Zone at Keller Williams Realty. That's right, we sponsor our own podcast. So if you know of anybody looking to buy, sell, rent, or invest in residential real estate in the Charlotte, Rock Hill, Fort Mill area, have them connect with us on their favorite platform. Enjoy the show.
It's Chris and Brian Jones, your real estate advocates, community connectors, talking Charlotte and York County area real estate, and interviewing business owners, entrepreneurs, and community leaders. Welcome to the Jones Zone Podcast.
All right, welcome to the Jones. Man, it's weird without Brian here. Count me down. All right, Seth, count me down. From three.
Three, two, one.
Welcome to the Jones Zone Podcast. Man, Seth knows how to count somebody down. Holy cow. I don't need Brian. I don't need Brian here. All right, well, I'll handle this one on my own anyways. So today, special guest Seth Hudson with Benton Outdoor Design. Benton Outdoor Design is an award-winning outdoor living and landscaping company right here in the Charlotte area. Whether you're looking to add features to an existing setup or transform your backyard into your dream oasis, Benton Outdoor Design can do it, and Seth can help you get that ball rolling. Seth, welcome to the Jones Zone. Good to have you, man.
Glad to be here. Thank you for having me. Yes, sir.
So that's a little brief introduction, but if you don't mind, give us some of your personal story, some of your professional background, and then what all you guys do at Benton Outdoor Design.
Okay, well, I'll tell you a little bit about myself. I started studying trees at the young age of 10 years old. Rather than going to the library for comic books, I would go for tree books. That was just something I was real passionate about. And always loved teaching people about it. Anytime someone had a tree question, they would call me up and I'd research it and get them an answer. So by 18, I became a York County Master Gardener through the Clemson University Extension Program. And moved on into the nursery business. Spent about 4 years total doing that. Moved from there over into more of a landscape maintenance, which included some athletic field maintenance also. And I just learned a lot, and having such a strong passion for plant materials and helping people. When I was in the maintenance management aspect, I was watching everything I was working with. And I make mental notes. That's what this plant's really going to do. But the tag at Lowe's might have said 3 to 4 feet tall and wide. That plant's now 6 to 8 feet tall and wide. Yeah. So those types of things just have really helped me have a unique perspective when I'm designing someone's yard. As time went on, I actually came on board while I was in design school, 2007, with Benton Landscape Design and Irrigation. They were based in Fort Mill, and he had ran that company from 1989 to 2007, and he sold the company. It was actually a year before the recession, and he actually brought me in, trained me on the hardscape, paver, patios, retaining walls, and things like that. And I went with the merger acquisition, and then a lot of things changed with the economy and all. I went to work for a few other companies, started my own private practice, which I still have that part-time. If someone needs help, they can call me and ask questions. I'm always available for as an advisor to help people any way I can. And but that it's been 10 years now that I've been helping people with their outdoor living spaces, and just really, really enjoy that.
What got you so interested in trees, man? Do you remember? Was there like a specific incident that sparked your interest like that?
You know, I can't quite put my finger on that specific incident, but I do know my grandmother, my dad's mother, always had the most luscious and immaculate gardens. She was in her gardens every day, but it was mostly flowers. She didn't really do much with trees. My mom had planted a lot of trees when I was younger. And somehow I just took up interest in it. Loved it. Fell in love with it.
So here you are, 10 years old. You're obsessed with trees. Is that a fair word to say?
Yeah, absolutely.
You're going to libraries, and then you become a master gardener. Yep. What's that? I mean, what is that?
So the master gardener program is set up. Some people are familiar with the Clemson Cooperative Extension Service. It's a part of Clemson University's horticulture program and agriculture program. And each county has an agent that acts as a support to commercial agribusiness, people who have farms that are growing cotton, all of the above. And he goes out and helps people. Well, when people have plant issues in their gardens, they can also call him. He's funded by the state. People call up the county extension agent and ask for advice. I've got a plant that's dying. Well, the extension agent's instituted the Master Gardener program to train volunteers in the community to help educate people, and it helps lighten the residential load of the cooperative extension agent. And so everybody that comes through the program has a little different area of interest, and mine at the time was vegetable gardening, organic vegetable gardening. And so I was a support volunteer as I went through that service. Yeah.
Some people will be like, who's this kid?
Yeah, seriously. Yeah.
And so where did you go to school? Did you go to Clemson?
I went through the Clemson Extension Service. I was actually homeschooled K-12, and I went to York Technical College and began their horticulture certification program. And again, here I go, more plants, more trees. So
that sounds really love that. It's cool to have a passion like that.
It is.
You know?
It is.
Like, no one grows up to say, I want to be a real estate agent. I'm not that I know. But, like, and you know what's funny is there's this quote. You ever seen Zoolander, the movie?
I believe I have.
So yes, there's Ben Stiller, and then there's Owen Wilson, who's the other guy.
Yeah, yeah.
And in that movie, Owen Wilson says, he's talking about how he was a unique child, and he was like, you know, other children were playing, and I was more interested in knowing what bark was made out of.
That was me. That was me.
What is bark made out of?
Yep, that was me.
All right, so, man, I have to ask you about the Hudson Family Band, dude. So you guys, you mentioned homeschool. Was that because you guys were so busy playing music, or?
Well, partially, yes and no. It was a faith-based thing. My parents wanted to have more of an influence in our individual education, and that was a personal choice that they made for our family. But I think the music came as more of a side effect.
You guys were at home all day.
And
before you know it, you're playing instruments.
And Dad was musical. He came from a musical family. All of his brothers played music. His mom and her dad played music. In fact, I've got to tell you about this. Back in the, way back. On my dad's side, my grandmother's grandfather was a championship violinist in this area known as a fiddler, fiddler. And we were privileged to play at a fire department fundraiser benefit a few years back in the same building that her great-grandfather had played in the 1920s.
To win the championship?
Yeah.
Like, geez.
Yes. Yes, how cool is that?
Cool. All right, so how many siblings do you have?
So there are 8 of us total. So I have 7 siblings. There are 4 boys and 4 girls. In that specific order, and again, big family was just a choice my parents made. They knew they wanted a big family, and that's what they went for. So, Dad being musical, of course, Mom came from a gospel quartet singing family, and so the singing came through her side of the family. The influences were there. They were strongly influenced by the Chuck Wagon Gang from the early 1900s. really, really good singing stuff, and.
So what instrument did you play?
So my very first instrument was kind of a toss-up between the harmonica and the piano. My older brother started taking piano when he was about 8 years old. I was about 4. And I would watch over his shoulder when he took piano lessons, and I would go behind him and try to actually pick out what he played. So it helped develop my ear for listening to tunes and things. To this day, I will honestly admit that I cannot read sheet music. I've just not chosen to invest that time. No excuses. But I've been able to listen to music and work things out. I played for a church band, West End Baptist. I played there for about 4 years in the contemporary praise group. When I was 9 years old, I started learning the drums. A drummer gave my mom a set of drumsticks when I was 4. He played in my dad's band. He said, you're going to need those someday. He's going to be a drummer.
That's cool.
And so, looking back 26 years.
And so you guys, how long has the band's been going for 26 years?
We started our band in 1997, playing at nursing homes. My dad worked for a nursing home over in Rock Hill, South Carolina. And one day it just occurred to us that this is a great place to play music, entertain some older folks, and the music we started playing was from their golden years. We played Glenn Miller's In the Mood. We played things like Roy Orbison's Blue Bayou, things like that. And that they just came alive. And
yeah.
We started doing that monthly for about a year. And then in 1998, we started playing at the Rock Hill Cracker Barrel every Saturday from April through October.
That's amazing. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Like in the parking lot or
we
what?
We actually set up on the front porch. And when we started, it was just my older brother on the keyboard, my dad on the bass guitar, and me on a small drum set. As the family grew, I was 15 years old the first time we played there. And We ended up a few years later, as the band expanded, we actually went to Nashville, Tennessee, played at the oldest Cracker Barrel in existence in Lebanon, Tennessee. We toured kind of the area, Pigeon Forge, Nashville, several areas around. And during that time, we kind of veered off of the easy listening, Western swing, country music realm and started really building our bluegrass set as well. So we made that a part of our show. That about that time was when I began learning the banjo. I was 14 and a half, 15 when I started there. I'm looking back 20 years now.
Jeez. That's awesome, man. Yeah, so, and how many people were in the band at any given point? It sounds like it just started with four, right?
Just the three of us, yeah. And then as my first younger brother grew, he took up the mandolin and the guitar. And we went on with the bluegrass stuff. We went on and actually won a few band competitions, bluegrass band competitions, and I won best banjo, my brother won best mandolin, things like that, and actually went into teaching music for a little while, and just trying to help people enjoy music, you know?
I was so interested in that. Did you sing and stuff too, or?
I was the first one in the band, or second one in the band. My older brother sang a few songs, but I was really kind of the one that took it and ran with it, and yeah. I tried.
That's amazing.
I tried.
Like, man, like, music is always something I've wanted to get into, and I just never, ever, like you said earlier, never taken the time to do it. Like, oh, I'd love to learn how to play a guitar or something, but actually sitting down and doing it, I've never done that.
Yeah.
But, so praise to you. How many instruments can you play total?
So, I've lost count. I can count more than just 3, 2, 1. Let's see, banjo, guitar, bass, harmonica, a little bit of piano. Those are really my five main instruments. Yeah. So, yeah.
Okay. All right, so how long have you been with Benton? You got through with college, you started working, you said, in the sports arena? Managing athletic fields? Or?
Well, I was actually worked for the school district.
Oh, okay.
And actually managed a football stadium and a couple of school campuses as well, and maintained their athletic fields, as well as the rest of the grounds, too. But I really got focused in more of the layouts of the field and things like that. Laid out the football fields, the soccer fields, shot put, all those baseball and softball fields as well.
Yeah.
It was a really, really good kind of a tangent aspect of what I do, but it was a great learning
experience.
You know
experience. What's really, I don't think the average person realizes how much goes into that. Because when I worked for the Charlotte Knights, I worked for them for 2 summers.
Nice.
As an intern, it was when I was in college, and the grounds crew worked non-stop. They were out there all the time, and I remember if they got like a fungus or you know, the slightest thing with the outfield, they would freak out. And I remember thinking, I was, you know, even at that age, I was probably, you know, 19 or 20, but I was like, man, it made such an impression on me, like, man, there is so much more to grass and all that stuff than
Absolutely.
The average person even thinks of. I mean, I just remember his name was Eddie, and he, you know, I remember him going off about him thinking they had some sort of fungus in the outfield, and I was just like, what is this guy
that
talking
is serious
about?
Business.
Yeah, he was like, man, we got the fungus is back. He was just like livid.
Yeah.
And so yeah, I mean, there's you know, and then of course Mr. Miyagi, Karate Kid.
Oh yeah.
You know, with the pruning of the bonsai trees, you know.
Totally.
It's an interesting industry.
Bonsai.
Well, tell us about Benton Outdoor Design, man. What all do you guys do, and what services do you provide? What areas are you guys in? I mean,
okay,
that down.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll start with the areas of coverage that we serve. We serve all of York County, primarily in the Fort Mill, Lake Wylie, Clover area. We do some in Rock Hill, but then Charlotte, pretty well all of Charlotte. We go as far north as Mooresville, North Carolina.
Okay.
Concord's starting to get a little bit outside of our coverage area, but we do a lot off like exit 38, exit 30, exit 28, the Peninsula, the Point. Those are two of our better communities that we work in, and a lot of higher end custom residential design. So I am a designer. That's my background. I do have my degree in landscape design, and landscape design includes pretty well the whole outdoor living experience. It's more than just arranging a bunch of flowers under a mailbox.
Mm-hmm.
I have to think about space, how people are going to use their areas. When I sit down with a client, I do similar to what we're doing right now. I ask them a lot of questions about their family, how they want to utilize their backyard. You know, if you could sit back, close your eyes and wave a magic wand and open them, and it's a perfect Saturday afternoon, What would your family be doing?
Yeah.
What would each person, where would each person be sitting? What could that look like? And I try to get people involved in and just thinking about how they want to use that area. Sometimes people just want to improve the front of their home. They just want curb appeal. They need some shrubs, some nice shrub material in front of their home. I'm always happy to help people with that. We do complete plant package renovations. I have gone into some of these larger properties in South Park up in Charlotte, some of these massive boxwoods, and they want to salvage those because they take them a long time to get so big. Well, I'll go in and I'll create planting arrangements in and amongst the other plants in a manner that it doesn't clash. So we do the design for people. As far as what our company installs, we install the paver patios. We do not pour concrete unless it's like a big driveway or something like that. But typically it's paver patios, sitting walls, retaining walls, fire pits. We do outdoor fireplaces, outdoor kitchens, pretty well everything to do with the outdoor experience. Low voltage lighting, that's one of our sweet spots. Drainage, you see that wet area every time you walk down the side of the house and your feet are making that squishy noise? That's something we come in and help people with a lot.
It's funny that you mentioned drainage because as you were talking, it made me realize that people really should, if they're going to overhaul their backyard or do something like that, they really should talk to a professional because you need to know about drainage, you need to know about plumbing.
Absolutely.
If you're going to set up some sort of outdoor kitchen, like you need some guidance, you know, you just can't start laying down a bunch of stuff and then the first storm comes, there's nowhere for the water to go or
absolutely
whatever. So as you were talking, I was like, man, you know, people really should consult a professional really before they just start laying down pavers and all that sort of stuff. So
absolutely.
What's kind of the first step people need to do? I mean, just call you and have you come out and do like a quote or consultation and then you guys just kind of go from there?
So there are, I'm glad you asked that because there are a couple of different ways. Clearly, I try to not make it specifically black and white, and I try to tailor each, since we do custom work, I try to tailor each situation to what that client has going on. If a client already has a master plan, this is what we want, and they just want to know how much that plan is going to cost, because there are designers out there who will draw things up, but they don't do any installation. So now they've bought that plan, and now they're ready to get pricing. Then they can call me, and I'm happy to look at that plan. So that's one approach. That's for getting a quote. A lot of homeowners will just call me and say, I need to get a quote for my backyard. And then when I start asking questions and start digging a little deeper, they honestly don't even know where to start.
Yeah.
At that point, it really doesn't classify as a quote. They need guidance. They need a consultation. They need me to come in and help them create a vision for their space. And so at that point, I try to schedule a phone call. I try to share some rough, once we get an idea of where they want to go, I try to start sharing some budget ranges that they can kind of expect. As we see that we're a great fit to work together, we arrange the on-site meeting. I go out and talk with them. I look at the property. And this is one thing that I think differentiates us significantly is that water flow thing. Even I see this so much in the construction and landscaping industries. So many guys who are quote-unquote professional in the business do not look at the water flow. To me, that separates a true professional from a not-so-professional after all.
Yeah.
Because I can't tell you the properties I've been on. The landscaper built up the shrub beds. Now they've dammed up water in the drainage swell.
Yeah.
Now the lawnmowers are tearing up the yard because that bed line didn't flow properly. Now the neighbor is complaining because water has dumped over into their yard because of something that my client did. Or not my client, but the person that had the work done. So, number one, water flow. If a professional does not talk about water flow, does not address drainage, that's a red flag.
Yeah.
So.
And I think the reason that I thought about that was because I had a miserable experience. We put down a bunch of mulch to like make this playground for our kids.
Uh-huh.
But the problem was the mulch and the playground was at a higher level than our pool.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I learned the hard way, dude. Hard way. Dude, that mulch, everything into the pool, I had to like...
At the bottom of the hill.
Pretty much, it was like at the lowest point of the...
Oh, my gosh, I know that was awful.
And it was the worst. But before we did that, we had to put like a French drain in the middle of the yard.
Absolutely.
So we get a bunch of water from our neighbor and his neighbor and her neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're like the lowest out of 4 yards, and man, you get one of those May
torrential
9 o'clock rains. And it's just, dude, I remember just coming out into my yard the next morning with so much mulch. I'm talking like almost a yard of mulch, you know, which is what?
A cubic yard of mulch covers about 10 by 10 foot area.
Yeah, so it was probably a yard worth of mulch because it wasn't the whole little playground we had.
That's still more than you want to clean up
the
pool.
Yeah, it took me forever, man. And then I had to get a new pool pump because I was running the pool pump. It was a nightmare. It was an absolute nightmare.
Unbelievable, wow.
And we had just put that liner in the summer before. So I was like, man, what a kick thing, man. So, yeah. Kicking the fun bag, or that's whatever you want to call it. So let's talk about just general tips. I mean, for people that maybe they can't afford to go all out and have an overhaul, or what are some general things that they can do to kind of spruce up their yard or their curb appeal?
All right. So number one, I always recommend that people try to get some ideas before they really make any type of investment. Go on Houzz.com, and that is Houzz.com. It's an online platform that contractors set up photo albums and things on there that you can go on and save the photos to your computer. You can create idea folders. And just narrow your ideas and think about what you really want to do in your yard. What is the most important thing? Do you just want the front of the home to look good to sell the home? Or do you just want it welcoming when you come home from work? Those two, to start with those types of thoughts in mind at the very beginning, is going to get you started. If it's a backyard deal, how do I want to use my backyard area? Think about your pavements. Go on Houzz, look up those types of things that you're looking for. Save the photos. Narrow your selections down to about three. Okay. 2 to 3. If you try to get too many options, it's going to confuse you. Most people, it just shuts them down and it's pretty well causes inertia.
Yeah.
2 to 3 options, narrow it down. Keep it simple. Ask yourself the question, if I could not afford to do anything but one thing in my list of wishes, what would that one thing be? What can I not live without?
Mm-hmm.
That's the number one thing you need to pursue.
Okay.
So at that point, you contact your professionals, you get a quote, or if it's more of an involved process, you need more of a design, call that professional and get some ideas and get moving.
And then what comes after that? So they've done that. They've decided they're ready to move forward with something bigger and larger. You guys come out, you do your consultation and your quote, and then what happens? You guys start coming out and do the work?
We start coming out and do the work. Depending on the scope of the work, if it's just a footprint, for example, of a paver patio, a lot of times we can paint that out on the ground and then do an estimate right off of that. If it's something, a lot of HOAs require a drawing. I'll actually create a full-blown CAD plan. It's like a blueprint. It's drawn to scale. It's accurate. I bid from it, and I build from it. And that way, the client doesn't end up paying for more materials or labor than they need to. A lot of guys will just shoot from the hip. They'll guess the price, and then they come back and say, oh, we need to charge you more money. I bend over backwards to not charge my clients
more. Yeah, that's the worst, man.
It is the worst. So the design process, once that's approved, everything's in, we take a deposit on the job, we get started on your work. Depending on the work, it can be a one-day job or it can be a month-long job. It just depends on the scope of what's being done.
What are you guys seeing? Are you guys seeing any trends in terms of outdoor living spaces, pergolas versus covered patios? I mean, what are you guys seeing? What's popular now?
Right now, something I'm seeing a lot of is people wanting the fire pit areas, places to sit outside. I think it's the onslaught of the cooler temperatures. And it seems like every fall, that's kind of a big thing. Springtime, people want more flowers. People want more color. They want that outdoor kitchen so they can have those cool barbecues and impress the neighbors. You know, have that real nice Mac Daddy grill area.
Impress the neighbors.
Yeah. I have the really nice stainless steel grill, outdoor kitchen set up. Fall time is definitely the fire pit, fireplace, sitting walls. Just it's cooling off. You just want a place to sit outside. As far as covered porches versus pergolas, honestly, I get about 50-50. Some people want the covered porch. They want a solid roof. Other people want that dappled light of the pergola. So as far as a trend, I have yet to see a specific set trend on that.
Yeah.
So.
And you guys can incorporate electricity, like lights and all that sort of cool stuff.
And the low voltage lighting, we were able to set that up and do a full light up the home, make it feel more secure so you're not, you don't feel like you're in a horror movie looking over your shoulders as you walk out the door in the morning, you know. So.
Now, do you guys have different setups in terms of like solar or battery operated lights?
We do low voltage LED only. We do not install solar. Okay. Yeah, we don't do any solar. It's all LED, low voltage. It's run from a transformer that plugs into a standard household outlet.
Okay.
And it's most of the fixtures, depending on what the client chooses, most of them have like a 10-year warranty on the fixtures and things. We do get a couple that have lifetime warranties on the fixtures, so good value add there.
Cool, man. So you mentioned fall, people want fireplaces and yes. Fire pits and stuff. With this time of year, homeowners are aerating and doing all that sort of stuff.
Yes.
I mean, what tips do you guys have in terms of preparing your yard to get through winter and to spring,
absolutely
summer, and have glorious, luscious yards in the spring
yes.
and summer?
All right, I'm glad you asked that, because right now is the specific time of year you need to aerate and overseed a tall fescue lawn. Or if you're going to buy sod for a fescue lawn or a bluegrass lawn, you got to get it in the month of October up till about the middle of November. Anything after that is going to be slower to come in and slower to do its get its establishment. This is the time for fescue. Usually expect about 4 to 8 weeks before you really see a showing of any major grass. If you're seeding, if you're putting seed down, once we have a freeze, which our first frost date in South Carolina is October 15th.
You know that, or?
That's the average first frost
oh, okay.
date. The average last frost date in the spring is April 15th. Here in the upstate of South Carolina.
Now, when you say frost date, that means you wake up and there's frost on the ground? And
yes. Okay. The temperatures have dropped to 32 degrees or lower, and tender plants can actually get burned.
Okay.
So the average first frost date is October 15th. But what I've seen in a lot of years, we don't get a killing frost, something that freezes back a banana plant or that clump of daylilies until the end of November, almost Thanksgiving or so. At that point, once everything starts dying back, is when you want to come in, clean up your perennials. October is when you want to rip out your summer annuals. If you had petunias, marigolds, impatiens, snapdragons. Well, snapdragons are somewhat okay. I'll get back to that in a minute. But most of all of your summer, high-color summer annual bedding plants need to be changed out in October. Then you go in with the fall kale, the fall cabbage, the pansies, the violas. And snapdragons do make a really nice fall flower plant as well. It gives you a lot of color. Looks really nice right beside your walkway as you go into your front door or right under a mailbox. Areas that you want to draw a lot of attention to. Get your pansies in October, because if you wait till December, two things is going to happen. The nurseries are going to be mostly sold out. What they do have is going to be picked over. Then with the onslaught of colder temperatures, they're not going to get established before the really harsh parts of winter come. Get them in October. Yeah, they'll get a little beating, but they will continue to bloom throughout the winter. And then by February, March, there's warmer days, 60 and 70 degree days, they're thriving. And you've got beautiful color right up till it's time to put in the summer bedding plants again.
So what do people need to do in terms of aerating? I mean, they aerate and then they lay seed down, and then what?
So depending on how much bare soil somebody has, and there are different companies do it different ways. This is not a service that our company offers. We do not do lawn maintenance. We do not do aeration services. However, having done that professionally myself,
yeah.
I'm able to educate you about it. So overseed, you want to aerate the area really well. I recommend a core aerator. It's one that actually pulls plugs of soil out of the ground. It allows that soil to breathe. A lot of the soils in the area with subdivisions, it's compacted, and that restricts grass.
So you want those little nuggets laying in your yard,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it looks like a dog you went through the yard. Exactly.
Good, I'm using the right kind.
It's like, should I step there or not?
Yeah. I got you.
But yeah, so the seed, straw, some people use wheat straw. Some people use a product called pin mulch. It's a little green pellet that expands. That is a clean, sterile product. If you put wheat straw down, that's a more economical approach. But it does contain weed seeds, and wheat, the actual grain that we grind flour that makes bread, wheat will come up in your yard if you use the yellow straw. But it is more economical, and a lot of companies do that. Peat moss is also used to hold the grass in place. Starter fertilizer, and then lime. Your lime needs can only be dictated by a soil test. That's the pH level, the acid or alkalinity levels of the soil affect whether or not that fescue can take up the fertilizer.
I've never gone that far. I've done the aerating, the seeding, the fertilizing. What does the lime do? I've never done that.
Yeah, so South Carolina soils are naturally acid. So you hear on deodorant commercials, pH balance for a man or pH balance for a woman. Well, plants have pH level, which is the acidity or alkalinity, 7.0 being the neutral point. Anything above a 7.0 is alkaline. Anything below 7.0 is considered acidic. South Carolina soils are naturally below that, except for around concrete. Areas where there's a lot of concrete, you will have more alkaline-based soils. Older farmsteads will have more alkaline because of the nice brown, loamy topsoil that has a lot of manure and things like that. But you have to test it. You run a soil test. Whatever that pH, the fescue needs about a 6.5, and it can take up to around a 7.5, if I remember correctly. If that soil pH is 4.0, which it can be in the red clay that we have here, you can fertilize that grass till you are blue in the face, and that grass will still turn yellow. And you'll wonder, what is wrong with my grass? Why is my fescue not green? I fertilized it. It cannot take up the nutrients from the soil if that pH is off. So long story short, the lime increases that pH and gets it right. Typically, we're focused on increasing the pH in this area. But a lot of landscapers will come out, lawn care guys, they'll say, oh yeah, you need 40 pounds per thousand or 80 pounds per thousand. But until you know what your starting point is,
yeah,
you really can't tell.
So. Is that why a lot of grasses come, you know, July and August die off, or is that because of the sun and the heat?
That's a combination of the sun and the heat, lack of water. Tall fescue is, honestly, we're kind of on the southern limit, in my opinion, of tall fescue. It's still recommended for South Carolina as an inexpensive turf grass, but if you can't water it, and if you're mowing it 2 inches tall, however much grass you have above the ground is how much grass you have, how much root you have below the ground. If someone's mowing their grass, tall fescue at 2 inches, they've got about 2 inches of root below ground. When it's hot and dry and you're not watering it, it's going to turn yellow and die out.
Yeah.
And then it doesn't spread out. So that's why people end up dumping all this money back in come fall, just to start all over, basically. So
yeah, it's really weird because sometimes, you know, driving through my neighborhood, yards are looking awesome in May and June.
Oh, yeah.
By the time July and August come around, it's like, man, that guy's yard was looking so good.
Oh, yes. Oh,
and
yes.
And now it's just like, and I'm sure they're frustrated. Luckily for me, I was overcome with weeds in it. Stayed green.
They're pretty hardy.
Stayed green. So, man, yeah, I appreciate all those tips. I want to talk to you about your social media presence.
Yes.
So I see you on Facebook and stuff like that all the time. How do you feel like social media has kind of helped you guys grow your business?
Well, I've seen social media as a way to showcase some of our work. And you know, when I first started out using it, I tried to do a lot of red marketing magazines and tried to promote and really push my services out there. And I realized people didn't like that. People want to, when you go on social media, people want to just have a conversation. They want to see what other people are doing. So we figured out that if we show pictures of our work, and then if I create a blog post and share that online, people see that. If somebody's interested in it, they can click on it and read it. If not, they can keep scrolling. It's not in your face, call us today, we want to do business with you. Just, it's not pushy. It gives people good information. And it's helped our visibility. It's helped raise our status in the marketplace. And we've actually got a good many referrals through the social media.
It's really good.
So. Yeah.
And you guys do good work from what I can tell, from what I've seen. I'm going to have you over to look at my yard soon.
Be glad to. We certainly try our best.
Yeah, I was telling you, there's so much possibility in our yard.
Absolutely.
I feel like we're not living up to potential. But
we're gonna let's get look better at it.
Yeah, I'm going to have you over, man.
I'll be glad
to. Well, Seth, why don't you take, we're going to wrap up here. Why don't you take the last minute or so, just kind of remind everybody what you do, where you work, and most importantly, how people can get in touch with you.
Absolutely. So again, my name is Seth Hudson. I'm the outdoor design expert with Benton Outdoor Living. Our website is www.bentonoutdoorliving.com. That's BentonOutdoorLiving.com. I have a couple of eBooks on there available. I have one called 5 Steps to Your Dream Backyard, and it helps homeowners. If you just bought a home, go get this ebook. It's 28 pages. It's very, very thorough as far as helping you get started with ideas. It's 5stepbackyard.com. That's the number 5, the digit number 5, and then step backyard. 5stepbackyard.com. Put in your first name, your email address. My phone number is 803-610-3192, and we can help you with your paved patios, your sidewalks, your retaining and seating walls, fire pits, fireplaces, outdoor kitchens, anything that pertains to the outdoors. Call me and I'll be glad to talk to you about it.
Sounds good, man. Seth Hudson, I appreciate it, buddy.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure, Chris.
Thanks so much for listening to the Jones Zone Podcast with Chris and Brian Jones. We'll catch you on the next episode.